All right, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Free for All. I'm your host, Big John, here on election night. Usually you'll see us on a Thursday night running the show. Tonight, obviously, due to special circumstances, Tuesday night, election night. It's been a long, long road here for everyone, libertarians, Republicans, Democrats, Greens, whoever you are. It's been a long haul once again. Every election season, it seems to get worse and worse in terms of what's being slung out there on social media, in terms of the what we have to put up with as the public. And of course, this has been no exception today. The last minute blitz from all sorts of talking heads on all sides of the equation, having stuff to say, most of it fanciful lies, if I'm being honest, easily fact-checked and discarded. But we're here to break this down. Our special guest, he'll be joining us in a few minutes, I'm sure. A Libertarian VP candidate, Mike Termott, is going to be joining us. He's scheduled to be here for the first part of the show. As soon as he joins us, I'll be happy to throw him on. But until then, let me bring on my partner at Grumblings Media, Mr. William Del Pilar. William, welcome to the show once again.
It's always good to be on this show. I enjoy being not your foil, but kind of pushing you to your limits in terms of taking you out of your as liberals love to say, your safe space.
My safe space, yeah. So, you know, William, give me your feelings. We'll be checking in on the electoral map on and off during the broadcast tonight. But give me your feelings right now. Early returns. Trump seems to be winning, as might be expected, in a lot of the southern states. We could break that down. But overall, what have you been doing today? Like, what was your whole process today?
To be quite honest, my whole process, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you about that process here in a second. Let's welcome your special guest tonight.
Oh, all right. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is a first for the show. A first for Grumblings Media. And we've never before had someone involved in a presidential, vice presidential election live with us as the votes are still being counted. So this is a first. We are honored, of course, to welcome our good friend, Mr. Mike Termott. Mike, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. That's a lot more introduction than I think I deserve. I'm taking a break from counting the ballots myself here in Virginia. I don't trust anyone else. I'm counting them myself to make sure they get it right.
That's right. Good for you. And of course, Mike, let me ask you this. It's been a long haul for you, as we all know. This started for you more than, I would say, what, 18 months ago, maybe?
Well, it depends on how you look at it. We really started before the previous convention. So it's been 2.5 years.
Wow. Going on 2.5 years. That's amazing. Just so people
understand. Before that, our team was running for Congress for almost a year. I have been campaigning or organizing a campaign continuously since April of 2021, since approximately May 1st of 2021.
Excellent.
3.5 years straight.
So in other words, you're saying you're tired, right, Mike?
No.
you know, somebody said it today on one of these talking head shows. It's a business, Mike. I mean, tomorrow people are already going to start floating, and we won't see it in the news for a little while. But behind the scenes, they're already going to be jockeying, especially with the fact it's going to be a wide open race again, because Trump, if he wins, can only serve one term. And Kamala, you know, even if she's in there, I just think we're going to get more of the same. So I see 2028 regardless being wide open. But what are your thoughts on that? That politics has literally become, I say multi-billion, because the presidential election alone is a multi-billion dollar race now when you add both parties up. So this is probably, I'm guessing, an $8 to $10 billion industry in terms of every 4 years.
The size of it in terms of the resources that are dedicated has certainly changed, and acceleratingly so, and somewhat ironic, given that I do believe that we long ago reached the point of diminishing marginal returns. I honestly don't believe that raising $800 million does you a significant amount of good beyond raising $400 million, for example. It means you get to run an extra $400 million of ads that no one pays any attention to. At some level, yeah. Not only do I think that the returns are diminishing, but I think that we got party guests going back and forth. Sorry about that. But in some sense, I think it opens up the possibility of actually having negative returns in some cases. I think that you run a certain number of negative ads. At some point, people get sick of you, not of the right. people about whom you're complaining. I think that's a real risk. So I think there's some irony there. It does need to be said that this has been a business, probably, maybe not for 200 years, but certainly for the vast majority of the past 200 years. Certainly since before the Civil War, there has been an industry around politics in the United States and, and soon thereafter internationally. I think that there are periods of change that are more, that show more churn, that show more upheaval than other periods. And I think that we're in one of those. Obviously, over the past decade, there's been a realignment between the Republicans and the Democrats, right, as to who it is that is voting for each of these parties. And, William, to your point, inside the Republican Party especially, I will purport not, I am no expert on the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, but inside the Republican Party, there is going to be a battle to determine what it is that is Donald Trump's legacy, what it is that MAGA means, what it is that the new alignment means, what the winning coalition is going to look like, sort of what the Democratic Party went through before Barack Obama was elected. And I think, there are a couple of possibilities that could be good for the libertarian movement. One is the possibility that someone who's libertarian minded shows a little bit of positive leadership inside the Libertarian Party, leveraging more of what it is that we recognize in Donald Trump to be a slight libertarian streak, as opposed to the, what I would characterize as his skepticism of the establishment, skepticism of certain aspects of recent American foreign policy, as opposed to the nationalism bullshit, the protectionism stuff that he talks about. There's another aspect of Trump that someone else is going to battle for, right?
Oh, yes.
Maybe that's J.D. Vance in the future, who knows? But there's going to be that battle inside the Republican Party. And I think that that means a couple different things can happen. Either one, there is some libertarian success inside of that party. Possibility number one. Possibility number two, there's not. And that really brings to the fore the fact that that party no longer, as I think most of us would argue today, that party no longer represents what it used to in terms of fiscal conservatism. And it will demonstrate that that party is completely insensitive to the failure of American foreign policy over the past 40 years. And that will create an opportunity for the Libertarian Party.
Right.
Whether the Libertarian Party is able to take, whether we're smart enough and skillful enough to take advantage of that remains to be demonstrated.
So, I hate to cut in, John.
Yeah.
Take a deep breath. I know Mike sat there and said Libertarian and Trump. Take a deep breath.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, but because he knows. So, Mike, here's the interesting thing. And I've been trying, as you know, when we've talked before, I'm not. And I've had good arguments with my good friend Larry Sharp about this, where he's almost given up, not given up the ghost in terms of libertarianism, but in terms of we got to stop fighting for ballot access. We got to stop fighting for 5% or whatever it is. Let's build a coalition, right? Whereas I'm still a little bit Pollyannish, maybe perhaps I'm still pie in the sky and say, look, there's ideals here that we should stick to. This last week, this last run up to the election, I've been getting into it a lot more on Twitter with the echo chamber and whatnot. So let me ask you a little things. I had an unexpected, somewhat viral tweet yesterday where I retweeted a picture, one of Angela McArdle's tweets saying like, hey, get on board this train. Don't miss it. Be, you know, ungovernable, whatever it was. But it was promoting Trump and MAGA and MAHA, right? And my tweet was something along the lines on, so says the chairperson of the LNC, who is simping for another party's candidate. Surprisingly enough, the results I saw were overwhelmingly in agreement with me. In other words, that the loud, boisterous types that make you think, like the Dave Smiths, the Michael Heises, the McArdles, who are making us think that, hey, these anarchist far-right libertarian nationalists, and again, someone has to define to me what a libertarian nationalist is. No such thing. It's oxymoronic. But you've heard that phrase tossed around, whether it's by Vivek or Elon or like I said, the New Hampshire folks. All of a sudden, though, it seems to me like maybe the rank and file of the party is not aligned with the squeaky wheel. It's not aligned with the folks that are making the most noise on Twitter. Now that we're coming toward the end of the campaign, what have we got? Like a couple hours left where you're the official LP candidate. What's your thought on that in terms of the future of the LP? Is it continuously going to be a fight between the hard right anarchist types and, let's say, the more traditional libertarians, like the ones who didn't sit there and believe the slander of Chase Oliver that was being put out by his own party, that didn't sit there and believe the slander that was put out against you by the own party, even after you guys were selected as the nominees, right? I understand.
Mostly after. Almost exclusively after.
So tell me your thoughts on that, Mike. Where do you see the future of the party in terms of the fight for, and I hate to be hack, for the soul of the Libertarian Party?
My concern is, this will seem odd, but work with me. Give me a moment here.
Sure.
My concern is actually less how that particular battle is resolved than the long-term implication. By long-term, I mean a decade, 2 decades from now.
Right.
The long-term implication that we go through these cycles all the time. Mm. This is our third existential cycle, some would say fourth, in the last 40 years. And what have we to show for it?
Now, when you say existential cycle, are you talking about internal squabbles?
Division caused by people pursuing interests other than the party's success?
Fair enough.
Or, as I would define it. Now, they might be interested in the party's success as they define it,
right?
But I would argue that definitions of success that do not include playing a role in American politics per se, not adjunct to,
right,
fill in the blank. I don't want to name names right now. But success defined as being in addition to or superior to running candidates successfully, leveraging the political process to move policy in the direction we want it to go in this nation,
right,
is not a definition of success that is consistent with the long-term interests of the role that I believe the Libertarian Party was set up to fulfill. And so what I'm afraid of, however this particular cycle is resolved, right?
Right.
Yes, you know, I have some personal feelings about that, but set that aside for the moment. However it's resolved, and whether it takes 6 months or 6 years, I don't know. But in one way or another, it's going to be resolved, and everyone's going to say, oh, well, you know, either way, that was good. You know, we survived it. We're stronger for it. Now we're all on the same page. We're going to do this, blah, 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 blah. And then a certain number of years go by. Again, I don't know how many, 2 or 22, but a certain number of years are going to go by, and we're going to be in a similar situation where a whole bunch of people have a different idea of what success is. And we're going to be easy pickings because we won't have institutionalized and fostered the institutions necessary inside of our party to be successful.
So give me an example of that. Well, what do you when you say that?
We have too many people in this party who are motivated by things other than the party's success. We have too many people in this party who are motivated to belong to a social club in which they can air their either their personal grievances or grind some policy acts.
Okay.
That makes them feel good about having shouted down someone else, either inside the party or outside the party. But for whatever reason, they enjoy membership in the Libertarian Party and participation for reasons that do not advance the political role of the party. And I fear that that is a long-term secular problem, not a cyclical one.
Okay.
And that is one that we need to fix.
So, and I appreciate what you're saying, but I want to understand for people who are listening, who might be out there that have questions, what's Mike talking about? Like, how can, like, I'm assuming you don't talk, you're not referring to like any particular single issue. You're not talking about orthodoxy in any given policy issue, right? I think
no, what I'm talking about is if, you know, let's imagine a scale from, on the one hand, you've got people who care only about success and don't care about the philosophy of the party.
You mean winning races. That's what you mean by success.
Right.
Winning races.
Those people we call Republicans.
Gotcha. That's
and
you, William.
Caucus.
That's you, William.
Yes. And well, you're talking about the Mises caucus people right now, aren't you?
No, I'm saying the Republican Party is a group of people who want to win political races.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah, yeah.
That's all they care about.
Well, Mike, isn't that what it's about?
Seriously? Exactly.
I mean, you have to win to be able to.
I'm not criticizing. I'm just observing that there are people who are interested in winning and they don't care about policy. And then there are people inside the Libertarian Party who care about policy and don't give a rat's ass about winning.
And you're saying,
you're saying,
where's the middle ground?
Right. Mike, you said all that beforehand and you kind of lost me. But what you just said, I think you hit it on the nail. That is the issue I think I and others have seen with the libertarian policy.
And it doesn't matter what the policy is. It doesn't matter whether it's the Mises caucus versus the Prags versus the classical liberal caucus versus
old guard. Example. Big Joe's a great example. He'll sit here, complain, bitch, whine, won't do one damn thing to help the party grow or the philosophy. And I'm not knocking you, John, because I think what John does is what most of the party does. And that allows those people to do what has already happened to the Democrat and Republican Party, outside forces or people who don't necessarily believe in the values of that party when it was created, take over. And I think that's kind of what you may be referring to in a certain way, or at least how I'm interpreting it.
Yeah, people come into the party who want to do things other than win.
Right, right.
And because we don't foster the types of institutions, processes, dedication to winning, because we don't do that very well.
Right.
Because we have so many people in the party who don't care about winning. we're naturally a place that attracts even more people who don't care about winning.
Right.
And therefore, I believe that until we fix that problem, we will always be subject to these internal battles over philosophy. That doesn't mean we need to turn ourselves into something that looks like the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, where it's only about winning and it doesn't matter about, you know, they change their philosophy every few years to win, right?
Right, right. Hey, Mike, I don't want to interrupt, but this is what I keep saying to John. So my question to you is I always tell John, look, the founding fathers built our whole government system on what? Compromise, a slow grind compromise. And I'm always asking Big John, hey, you have your philosophy, but politics is built on compromise. So how do you make that work, Mike? How do you sit there? I mean, Reagan sat there and said, you don't have to give up your beliefs to find that compromise. So what do libertarians need to do to get to that point? Because to me, that's the big divide right now.
I think that we need to learn how to sell our philosophy in bite-sized pieces, even while, yes, weather vaning where we want to go in the long run, that's fine. But this idea that you need to be the most aggressive when it comes to shoving your philosophy down someone's throat is just code for, I don't really care about the political process. Well, that's fine. You don't have to care about the political process. And in fact, I would suggest for most Americans, you shouldn't care about the political process, right? That's fine. But that doesn't mean you should be running for office representing a political party, right?
Yeah, and that's been my beef. It's not that, like, the people that I find disagreeable in the Libertarian Party have disagreeable ideas with me. That's, you know, as a libertarian, you're always disagreeing with the majority of people you run across. It's like, why represent a party that you're not aligned with the majority of people? So, but that aside, like, so I understand what you're saying, and everybody has that personal line, Mike, right? So when it was Gary Johnson and William Weld, a lot of people said, "Well, whoa, 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 William Weld, that's a bridge too far. We'll take Gary on the national ticket, but not William Weld. He's too much of a Republican." Joe Jorgensen, Spike Cohen, those two were a compromise ticket, right? Spike has said to me several times, I never talked to Joe during that whole campaign. Like, you know, I doubt if they had each other's emails at some point, right? So I understand that everybody has their personal line. What is it for libertarians of various stripes? Everyone has their personal line as to how much they're willing to compromise on their beliefs in order to have political success, right?
So, well, John, before you have Mike answer, because I want to hear Mike's answer, let's use you, God, too much coffee, as an example. What's yours? So, and let's have Mr. Termat dissect that a bit.
Well, look, as a I consider myself a libertarian. I don't consider myself an anarchist. I consider myself, look, by classical definitions, I'm either a minarchist or a classical liberal, right? So that means, do I believe in no government? No, I think there should be a government. But I think you can't be – a perfect example is you can't call yourself a libertarian and a nationalist at the same time. If you understand what those words mean, you can't be both at the same time. So for me, as an example, a nationalist does not belong in the Libertarian Party. And it's okay to be a nationalist, but don't be a nationalist in the Libertarian Party, because that's oil and water. So there's a lot of issues like that, right? Libertarians of various stripes believe in free trade. We don't believe in tariffs. We don't believe in regulations. We don't believe in things of that nature. Mike's an old Wall Street guy. He, you know, I know he's aligned with me, a good Austrian economist, right? So Mike, like, without getting to like a list of here's 20 libertarian points, here's how many you need to be, 17 of them, you know, pick and choose A and B Chinese menu. But I'm saying, like, when you say let's institutionalize that process where we still have our North Star and we're focused on winning, right? Like, we want to get both. What in your mind, how do we achieve that? Like, for example, are there any parliamentary things, any bylaws that you would recommend? For example, here's an obvious one. If the no officer of the LNC should be publicly supporting a candidate of another political party, I think that should be a bylaw. If it's not already, I think it already is. but that's one option. Is there something like that? Like, let's have party bylaws that prevent that sort of thing?
I don't know that there are party bylaws. That's a very interesting question, to which I admit I have not given thought whether there are bylaws that would matter. But, well, the most obvious one at the moment, by moment I mean the past 5 months,
right,
is when you have a candidate, everyone ought to support him.
Right.
Okay.
Or at the very least, not support his opponents.
Yeah, I think we can go one step further and say you ought to
support like him. If you don't support the candidate as an officer, keep your yap shut. Like
I'm
William
not talking
said.
About officers. I mean the party.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, in if you were to look at other parties who are successful, you know, what are the differences in behaviors? Right.
Well, they all fall in line, basically, is around election time. Let's face it.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And does that mean that, you know, Nikki Haley all of a sudden is a woman without principles? Well, maybe you believe that she was a woman without principles before. But
yes, thank you.
Okay, but I don't think too many people, some, I don't think too many people said, oh my goodness, you know, I really think of her now as being an unethical person because, you know, she is supporting Trump. Right?
Right.
Now, I'm not suggesting that's a perfect example, but to your point, you know, do people fall in line? Right?
Yeah.
Yes, they do. And Trump is a tough example. You know, Trump is the most difficult example, certainly of my lifetime, of a politician that so many people inside of his own party have had a hard time supporting. Right. You know, I would suggest that is going too far in that direction.
You mean blind party loyalty?
Yeah. You know, I think that.
Well, that's a matter of opinion, Mike.
Yes, it is.
Define as blind party loyalty because you're giving Trump as an example, but we can give literally every politician as an example to that. Yeah.
I think you could. I would argue that you'd be wrong. If you put all other party nominees, you line them up on the table here, I'm going to say.
Hold on.
I'm going to say one stands out in terms of cult of personality, head and shoulders above all of the others. I don't think you can pick out anyone since Andrew Jackson. Okay, I'm going to throw that on the table. I don't think you can pick out anyone since Andrew Jackson and quite possibly not since George Washington. Around whom the American public has formed a similar cult of personality.
I agree with Andrew Jackson. Ironically, just earlier this afternoon, I said the same thing on a different conversation. I said, look at Andrew Jackson, the first Democratic, the guy who created the Democratic Party. You know, how divisive he was, a racist on one hand,
right,
but yet he unified when literally the whole country at the same time.
Right.
Yeah, he was so divisive.
Now, people falling in line behind Donald Trump despite having to hold their nose, you know, you've probably gone too far if you feel like you need to take a shower after, you know, you've made that endorsement. But
well,
for the most...
Mike, did you see the ironic part? Trump lost Nick Fuentes now.
I did not hear that. That's
I'm throwing
that's
it
good.
Out there.
That's a good thing.
I'm throwing it out as a joke. Nick Fuentes came out and said, "I retract my endorsement of Donald Trump."
Did he really say that?
Yeah, he did.
That was a few months ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it was this week. It was this week.
He endorsed Trump. Kamala a month or so ago.
Donald Trump is a past president of the United States of America, and quite possibly the next president of the United States of America. For him to have lost that endorsement, I think, is a net positive for the planet.
I agree.
But you know, hold on. It also shows how powerful the media is. Trump left, what was that third party John called in the early 2000s? He left that party when they brought in that KKK guy, you know? So the media has done a lot to this. So I defend my boy Trump. He's done a lot. And I'll leave it at that. But what's that party that he used to be like? The Reform Party. Wasn't that what it was called?
No, back Reform Party 2000s? That was Ross Perot. I think Trump always, the first time he tried running was as an independent, I think.
No. He was in that party. Anyway, I'm dragging out.
Yeah.
I apologize.
Yeah.
But there was a party, yeah.
Yeah, but I think you're right, Mike. So, like, even within the Republican Party, there are those that you hear this refrain the whole time, right? Like, I don't care for Trump, but I'm holding my nose because I hate fill in the blank more. I hate Clinton, Biden,
and to be
Harris
fair,
more.
if you agree with Trump's policies, you know, he's obviously a populist. That's, you know, a lot of people really appreciate that. Protectionist, a lot of people really like that. He does have some natural skepticism of some of our foreign policy and some of our, you know, the way our government operates in certain ways. A lot of people do appreciate that. I'm not suggesting that just because there's a cult of personality, that is per se a bad thing. You know, personally, I'm not a big cult of personality guy. So, you know, if that's your shtick, knock yourself out. My point is not that it's evil per se. My point is that cult of personality is taking the fall in line thing too far.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And actually, I think William's probably seen this on social media all day. So a lot of the talking points from Republican influencers today had exactly that slogan, and like Charlie Kirk and Elon Musk and all these people said, stay in line, stay in line. That was literally the admonition all day.
Yeah.
Right? It was like, stay in line, guys. We need white men to come vote for Trump. Stay in line, stay in line.
I didn't see that at all. Hold on. I did not see that in one of Elon Musk's tweets.
No, it was in Charlie Kirk. Very specifically, Charlie Kirk. Yeah. But my point is, the stay in line thing, when I read it, I was like, oh my God. To me, that's saying, like, don't deviate. What you were saying, like, stay in line with the party.
I know that's
not what they meant. I'm saying when I read it, William, to me, I'm like, oh, stay in line. He said, that's the imagery that came to my head. I'm not saying that's what they literally meant. Stay in line. Even after the polls close, you still have a right to vote.
Right.
So get there and stay in line. I'm saying it's almost as if the imagery it conjured up is stay in line. Don't deviate. Right. Because they were terrified that more women were going to show up than men in this election cycle to vote.
Right. And we all get that. And I think we all recognize what we're saying here. My point is that our party could use a little bit of let's encourage each other to support our candidates.
Right. And just a quick break here, Mike. Let's get some quick reaction. I've got the live results here on my other screen. This is being updated by the minute. Right now it stands at Donald Trump at 214 electoral votes.
None of the battleground states have been called yet.
Correct. And 179 for
North Carolina has been called, I think.
Doesn't look like it.
North Carolina has Trump ahead with 77% reporting, but it hasn't been officially called. But you're right. Pennsylvania is in the same boat.
North Carolina looks like it's going to go for Trump, but none of the battleground states have been called by any of the major
outlets. Yeah. And by the way, I just wanted to let you know, Mike, I did take a screenshot of early New Mexico tallies where you and Chase were in a dead heat with Trump and Vance after the early.
Bless your heart, John.
I did. Yeah. You guys were at, you guys were basically tied at 50% early returns.
This is after what, four people had voted?
Not quite that few, but it was something like, it was four digits. It was like a couple of thousand each, but so let me ask you this.
Exciting. I used to have a photograph of a buddy of mine. We had gone to a track meet in Georgia when I was in college. And at the University of Georgia at the time was a guy who was a future Olympian.
Right.
And my buddy beat him out of the blocks in the 100-meter dash. And we took a photograph of that first stride out of the blocks. And man, we had that thing in the locker room for 2 years. We worshiped that photograph.
Yeah.
You know what happened over the rest of the 99 and a half meters of that race, right?
Right, right. But, yeah.
So I know what you're saying and I'm grateful.
Yeah, no. And so let's get down brass tacks. Where are you guys projecting?
I don't know.
You and Chase at this point, any gut feelings or any guesses?
No. Okay. And, you know, for a whole lot of reasons that, you know, that we don't need to delve into, but, you know, we all recognize that we were unable to raise money. This is not a new problem. We've been unable to raise money for a few years now inside of the party and in our circle. So that wasn't completely unexpected, but it was even worse than we had, you know, thought it would be. That was a tough uphill climb. And that's notwithstanding not only a lot of efforts, but a lot of very talented and hardworking people making really Herculean efforts to bring in the money that we did bring in. I'm very proud of the efforts that were made that kept our candidates on the road and let us run some ads. I do need to say this. I have been pleasantly surprised by the extent to which our message has been well received, where it has been, you know, our problem is it doesn't get received, right? But to the extent to which it does, I continue to be amazed how little pushback we get. And I gotta say, notwithstanding that there are a whole lot of people in the party that probably don't want to hear it, maybe that's why I need to say it, you have to admit, objectively speaking, Chase Oliver is very, very good at this.
Yes, I've said it before, and I've even had to have William admit to this on camera, that yes, Chase...
Whoa. I never admitted to anything. I was on that... You have to realize, you have to... A true warrior will honor his worthy opponents. And regardless of what numbers you point out, when I saw Chase campaigning for a senator in Georgia, even before John and I got together, I knew he had some chops. He was clearly heads and above most of the candidates in your own race there for the VP nominee. He is what you call polished. Does that mean I agree with him? Does that mean I believe everything he said? I'm like, no, he's a politician, but he's a very polished politician. And I say that as a compliment, because at the end of the day, his shrewdness, I believe, as a polished politician, is what allowed him to see the bigger picture during your convention and to squeak out that win over the arrogance of some of his opponents.
Well, what's funny, Mike, is he didn't even give me a chance to finish what I was going to say.
Which was on the same page finally, though.
Which was that William has always said that he always thought that you and Chase, or Chase and you, depending on the proper order there, always conducted yourselves with professionalism. He always thought you guys were polished, as he said. And he always said to me, he goes, you guys, you know, those guys, compared to what William's impressions of prior libertarian candidates, like if you went back even before Gary Johnson, that those were kind of like, I'll admit it, were comical, some of those campaigns and some of those candidates were comical, right? To sit there and say, like, hey, even William would say, he goes, look, I don't, I'm a Republican. I don't necessarily agree with the libertarian policies on a lot of things, but those two guys of yours, John, they're professional, for lack of a better term. They come across as serious candidates. They're putting in the work, they're traveling, they're campaigning, you know, which I always said as well, you know, and, I think that's a credit to you guys. And I think you should be commended on that. And I'm happy that you guys did represent the LP, got the chance to represent the LP. And I think you guys represented us well, and you put across our ideas and our policies the way they should be put across. I don't think you guys came across overly aggressive. You're firm in your beliefs. And you know, I in social media, like, I see where Chase is out in the field, and then I'll see you on Twitter like, hey, here's why tariffs are bad. You know, boom, there we go. Here's why... You know, we don't, yeah. You know, that's why immigration is a net positive. And you do come on shows like this, and you do, you know, I will ask one question though. What about the criticism from some libertarian corners that you guys didn't go on like the Timcasts, the Joe, or attempt to go, I don't know if you guys did or not, attempt to go on Joe Rogan, attempt to go like, A, let me ask you flat out. Did you attempt to go on those big name podcasts at all? And we'll answer that first. Did you guys try to reach out to the Joe Rogans, the Patrick Bet Davids, the Tim Pools and people like that?
Yeah, they won't have us.
They won't have you. Okay. So that right there is one narrative that is what I think counter, because in a lot of these spots, the narrative was Chase doesn't want to come on these shows. He's afraid to come on and engage us in these shows, which didn't sound like Chase to me. And it doesn't sound like Mike Termott to me. So you're definitely saying like, hey, we reached out and they just did not want us on those shows.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is not a gray area. This is black and white. We wanted to go on. We reached out to every podcast in earnest and multiple times through multiple channels. Typically, we get ghosted and sometimes we get a no.
So that is one narrative that I think.
By the way, I'm not going to name names, but everybody on your list and more.
Yeah, because it seems strange to me that. Again, I understand Rogan is the world's biggest podcast, right? Anybody getting on that is a fluke by nature. So I get it. But like, I would think, especially after there was a lot of like Dave Smith on Tim Pool, Dave Smith has been on Patrick Bet David, and it's not there to promote his comedy career. He's there to promote the LP. And half the time he was on there, if not every time he was on there, he was being negative towards you and Chase. And by negative, I mean not supporting them, openly saying I'm voting for Trump. I mean, William and I had a chuckle last week because I read his tweet where he goes, I've been a member of this party since 2018, like as if that's some incredible bona fide that all of us should shudder before. I'm like, hey, man, look at me. Look at Mike. You know, we've got enough snow on the roof and we've been at this a lot longer, you know, in our own way. So I think that's a portrayal that there's this perception that you guys ducked major podcasts and media, which I don't know. I mean, obviously, I think I know where that came from. But OK, so I'm glad to hear that you guys reached out. At least it wasn't your choice not to be on those platforms.
You know, I got to say something here because I don't see it as John does. As soon as he mentioned those shows. Part of my thought process from the get-go was you guys have been undermined, and I can see him. Yeah, don't bring him on. That's what I thought was happening for a lot of these shows that Big John has mentioned there. So it sounds like that's what you're saying also, Mike. I mean, you're pretty blunt there. No, we did ask.
I don't know what else to say. I don't. I cannot purport to know why they don't want us on. They won't talk to me.
Well, you know, I'm going to say this. You know, somebody told us that certain people should be promoting the party who are in the position to promote it and don't. And going back to what we discussed early in the show, I think that's part of the problem with the Libertarian Party.
Of course it is. That's exactly what we're talking about.
You know, and these people are in high positions. They're in positions of influence, not necessarily power, but positions of influence. And you guys have to have a reckoning. I mean, let's be honest. It's human nature, right? The Democrats have thrown out every blue dog Democrat with the guy from Oklahoma, Nebraska in Obama's first term. And the Rhinos have taken after Reagan left office, the Rhinos just. They locked down the party as a conservative. I see more fight at every California convention. I see the Republicans doing their damnedest and do succeeding a lot of times to cut us grassroots off at the knees. So my point of saying it's human nature is it's not going to change. It's nothing to do with your philosophy. It's nothing to do with your politics. It's human nature. People see an opportunity to take power, to do their own thing, and they do it. Again, my take is I may disagree completely with the Libertarian Party, but if you are a member in the Libertarian Party with a job, meaning you have certain roles, then either shut the bleep up if you don't care for the candidate, or more importantly, do your job to support it. And if you don't want to support that candidate, resign from your position. But people are on ego trips, which is human nature. So they're not going to do that. They are going to stay in power and make life difficult. You know, you guys may say this or that about Trump. But I mean, people were reminded this past week, Oprah loved him. The View loved him. They all loved him until he came down that elevator with an R by his name, which has been historically the issue with Republicans. You know, so again, I get frustrated when people talk philosophy, politics, ideology, this or that. I'm like, look at freaking human nature. I tell Big John a lot. I've been to 30 some odd countries, and I am a student of what do they call it? A people reader. You know, I love to watch people different, and you see the same human traits. So I eventually became a I don't know what the term is, but I eventually realized it's not our ideology, our beliefs. It's human nature in us.
We're a very tribalistic species. There's no question about it. I think my fundamental point is that we need to start believing that if this political party is going to be successful, we need to start believing that the party has to represent the tribe to which we have some allegiance. Maybe loyalty is too strong a word. But we have to make that our tribe. And rather than doing that, we have far too many people who view the Libertarian Party not as the tribe, not as the vehicle that they want to make successful, but rather an overarching social club that has multiple tribes in it to which they owe some sort of loyalty or feel some sort of allegiance, because they're not interested in political success. They are interested in philosophical argument.
Yeah. And look, I'll be the first to admit, I love arguing philosophy. I love talking about policy, Mike, as you well know. But at the same time, I've never attempted to run for office. I've never attempted to be in the political machinery. And I think I told you the story. I walked into a Libertarian gathering. Someone nominated me and made me the communications director here in my local LP, and I refused it. I said, I'm not cut out for you guys. I if I can help you out on the podcast, I will. But I'm no politico, so at least you know your role. Mike, I want to show you something just to get a
Thank
few comments.
You. You've been great, and go ahead. I'm grateful for the time.
No, man. You know you're always welcome here.
What state is this?
This is New York.
New York!
Where I went in, and as you could see, since...
Oh, this is you. That's
this
great.
Is me. You could see I wrote in Chase Oliver and Mike Termont on my ballot, because that's the only way I could vote Libertarian in New York State. However, Mike, I need your comment on this. How is it that Libertarians cannot get ballot access, but there is a line for the LaRouches?
I was just about to say, look at that. LaRouche's on the ballot.
LaRouche is on the ballot. Where is he? Right there. LaRouche. Now, Mike, if you can explain that to me, I would love to understand. Do you have any idea how the Libertarians and the Greens, to be fair to the Greens, the Libertarians and the Greens could not obtain ballot access, but every goddamn cycle that I go to vote, right there, line E, the LaRouche party. I don't even think Lyndon LaRouche, is he still alive? I don't even think he's still alive.
No, Mike, he's not. I think his widow is.
How do you explain that, Mike?
First of all, I need to say, I don't know.
Okay.
Okay.
Honest answer. That's your
Aleppo
moment.
That's the honest answer. Okay. I know that Diane is a very popular person in a lot of circles in which I don't travel. I don't purport to understand those circles. I've met Diane. I've met a couple of the people from the LaRouche organization. And my understanding is, I have no expertise here, but my understanding is that some of these circles are larger and more well-funded than people like you two and I would sort of a priori expect, knowing some of the history, right? If you know anything about the history of LaRouche himself, you would not expect in the year 2024 there to be any money or a significant number of people traveling in that circle. But I'm told that I would be wrong about that, that there are resources there. So it may well be that they went through I don't know the answer, but if maybe they dedicated all of their resources toward getting on the ballot in a small number of states, one of them was, you get where I'm going.
Right.
It's I don't know. That's my guess, but I really don't know the answer.
It's infuriating, though, Mike. I will say that. Okay, let's do a quick check-in, Mike. And I'm also going to bring in the folks from our other show, Fired Up, G. Mangani and Annette Ross. Hi, guys. Say hi to the Libertarian VP candidate, Mike Termott, who's joining us for tonight.
Hello.
How are you guys doing? You enjoying the coverage?
Yeah, sorry for triggering you, because looks like the poly market odds are at 95% here. So
G and Annette, we wanted to bring you on to get the energy in the field for it's been a long time since the Republican has had a big win. Things are looking good.
Where
so
are
far.
You guys?
Let me take it. I'll give you a tour of the room real quick.
Mike, they are in San Diego. In downtown
at
San
what?
Diego. At the Grand Hotel, the Republican Party hotel there.
Okay, I am not sure how to turn my camera around, but I'll just do this.
Super.
Yeah.
That's
okay, so we lost you, so we'll take
Well, that's all good. You guys can bring them back, but I need to thank you for having me on, and thank you for taking the time to talk to me, and we're going to discuss this. Let's make sure that we have a chat around January 21st. Hopefully, okay. We're not going to have a serious chat on January 7th, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I hear you, Mike. And listen,
not according to Raskin, Congressman Raskin. I mean, oh my God.
Mike, as always, I want to take a moment. Thank you for always being a friend to the show. Thank you for always coming on when we've asked you. Thank your support team, Gabrielle especially. She's always been willing to answer texts and phone calls, so I appreciate her as well. And listen, I know you're not done with the Libertarian Party, right? Is that correct?
That is very correct, and the Libertarian Party is not done with me or with Chase. And I look forward to seeing what Chase does in the future as well.
So, Mike, thank you so much for joining us. And listen, I'm not done with you. So get your contact info for me directly, if you don't mind me harassing you every so often. We'll get you on the show to talk about issues as they progress, if you're willing, that is.
Hey, of course. I look forward to talking to you soon. And I'm serious, around January 21st, I'm guessing there'll be some stuff to talk about. I'm just guessing.
And listen, if you're ever in New York, I promised you once, I'll say it again publicly, I'll buy you a dinner and a drink at Francis Tavern, the birthplace of liberty in New York. You know that, right?
I do know that. That's worth making the drive alone.
I'm telling you, standing over.
Where are you, Adam?
I'm east of Richmond, Virginia.
Oh, the great state of Virginia.
Which is still undecided right now, according to the map. So
yeah, that's a weird thing.
Has not been called yet.
That's a weird thing.
It says Harris is actually in the lead with 90%.
Yeah, so, that's a weird thing. I think Chase and I are going to catch her at the last minute. You guys have a good night.
Good night, Mike. And again, thank you for everything. Really appreciate it.
All right. We'll talk later.
All right, guys. Yeah. We'll talk. Ciao. All right. Let's see if we can get G back on. G. Okay,
hey
G, you're back on.
Yeah, sorry about that. Just some technical difficulties, but I'm here at Election Central, and this is the San Diego Republican Party, and this is basically the room where you got all the candidates and elected officials that meet together. You got the press. Some would call them the fake media, but I'll call them the press here. and then here's a stage where candidates will take, give their victory and concession speeches. And then you can see the results, projector screen way down there.
Right.
And then the biggest part of the party is over here, and it's going to get super loud, so I apologize if it's too loud. But this is the biggest part of the party, and this is the hotel lobby of the U.S. Grant, where a lot of people are. And there's a pianist and bars everywhere. And we probably have somewhere around 500 or 600 people here right now. So,
okay.
Yeah. It's a fun vibe. We do this every 2 years. Presidential years, obviously, are bigger than governor years. And I just want to give you a little vibe of what's going on down here.
So, G, California, according to the AP, has been called for Harris. No great surprise there. Yeah.
That's a shocker.
But tell us, how are the local candidates doing for the GOP there?
You know, up until about 2 minutes ago, we still had zero results. And I believe we just got some results dropped in. And I'm going to show you Annette Ross, and she's where are you? You're on the top three, right? Okay, she's in the top three, and there are three seats, so that's really good.
I might pull it off.
And all right.
This is Kerry Vinci, and he's also running for the same school board, and I think he's in position one right now, first place, yeah.
How much is in?
So I'm on a podcast right
3%,
now. This is Carolyn Dorsey.
3%.
She's the mama bear of San Diego Republican politics right here. So,
yeah. So, gee, it's at 3% right now. It looks like Adam Schiff was called the winner almost immediately.
Yeah, at 8:01, right?
Pretty much. Well, yeah. I mean, he has 56% of the vote, the 44%. It's just, you know, that's just too tough a race.
Yeah, this is California. The most corrupt.
You know, it's whether you're Democrat, Republican, whatever, Adam Schiff is one of the most corrupt inept human beings in this country to lead a state policy. It's he's just bad news.
Who called him pencil neck?
I did.
So here's Bill Ross.
Bill.
Just wanted to show him from one of the related shows.
Yeah, I was going to say, to our audience, Bill is co-host of Points on the Board. And also to before we run out of time, I want to make sure to say G and Annette that you saw before, along with William, co-host Fired Up. So what if you're not a libertarian, which it baffles me as to why you wouldn't be, and you want to catch conservative politics, tune into Fired Up. Their usual time slot is Friday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Fired Up with William and G. And, G, thank you, A, and good luck in your race. Good luck in the next race. And let's hope that your candidates win. I can be big enough to say that.
Yeah. Thank you so much, and we'll talk soon.
All right, G, thank you.
We'll talk tomorrow night.
All right, William. So right now I'll put up the map. We could get some of your thoughts. We see Trump is at 230. He's 40 votes away from winning the presidency. Harris, the swing states for the most part are trending Trump, but they're yet to be called.
Like North Carolina is red there, so they called North Carolina.
Right. Yeah. So they put North Carolina in here. So that's part of the 230. So, we've still got Minnesota, Michigan, Michigan, Wisconsin, Georgia is still up in the air. Pennsylvania is still up in the air. Virginia is still up in the air. Those are like what I would think would be considered the swing states at this point. I'm not sure. I think Nevada this year is considered a swing state.
Yes, it shifted to undecided a week or two ago.
Right, and they haven't reported any results yet, so they're still counting that. So, William, interesting having Mike on. What do you think of Mike's idea? Now, what he said doesn't necessarily fall in line with current LP leadership. Like, it certainly doesn't fall in line with the Mises caucus.
Right. Actually, I think he's more of a pragmatic guy. But he also exhibited one of the problems I say you guys have in your party. You're so intellectual. Sometimes you got to just put it in layman terms. It's like he had this long answer, and then he put it perfectly as succinctly. Is that the word? When he sat there and said what the real issue was. I'm like, there you go, right there. And I'm not saying that as a knock. You got to learn how to talk to your audience and how to grow your audience. And
that's always an issue is talking to, and you know, I have this problem as well. You know, it's like if you're, and again, this is not to rave on myself, but if you view yourself as an educated person, as an intellectual, you always want to talk on the level that best expresses your ideas and your thoughts. And a lot of times that's speaking at above, like, one of the things that Trump is always either praised for or derided for is that when he speaks on a fifth grade level. And again,
you're right.
It is what it is, right? Yeah.
Well, and at the end of the day, he is correct because What are the masses? What is our current reading level in this country? It's a terrible stat to give. It's fourth grade right now. It's gone from eighth grade in 1996, 97 to fourth grade today. And you know why? Because of social media deteriorating, the way we do posts, the way we shorten words, it's gotten worse. But to a politician, that's a credit. Now, when you have the media on your side, you can talk like Obama and you can take 40 minutes to answer one question and never get an answer to it and be applauded. But if you want to get elected on as a red person, you know, a Republican, what Trump has done is shown the way. Here's why. The parties have switched. You look at the donation numbers. The Democrats own, and they have for a few election cycles now, the Billionaire Boys Club. And that's taken until this cycle. It was always a given. The Republicans have had it, and they haven't. You've seen a transformation of the party. I just told my wife, and I'm digressing a bit, but I just told my wife, this is the first time in our lifetime we hear in these what do they call these pundits, you know, talking about pundits. The black vote, talking about the black vote and who has this portion of the black vote, that portion. Before, it was all one unified. I used to get frustrated because it'd be plus 90% all voting Democrat. I'm like, look at the damn policy. Where have you been? Where has
black it, it was you know? It was higher than that, quite honestly. It used to be closer to 95%. Yeah.
Right. But the point is this first time ever. So you're seeing a transition. And I think Trump, I mean, my God, how is a billionaire seen as a man of the people? It's just, I mean, it's who Trump is. So he's leading the way. And Mike was very astute. The only thing I would disagree is you libertarians look at yourselves as you're unique and different. No, your party's no different than the other parties. It's just on a much smaller scale. But you have the same problems, the same issues. But he hit it spot on in terms of there's going to be a battle coming up in 2028. What I would add to it is Obama was an outlier because you're seeing the socialists that have taken over the party through the help of Obama, but they've gone too far. So there's going to be an internal war as well if Kamala – you know, John, is it Kamala or Kamala?
I've heard it both ways, so yeah, either way is fine. Yeah.
But there's going to be a civil war there. So think about it. The top three parties in this country are literally going to be waging a civil war over the next coming years.
Well, I think you're right. Because, look, once Trump is gone, and one way or another.
He's gone. If he wins, after tonight, Trump is effectively gone. It's a free for all for 2028. So,
right.
So not once he's gone.
No. I'm saying after tonight, one way or another, Trump hopefully is done with. So now you have the Republican Party that all of a sudden has to decide, are we going to continue down this road of populism and nationalism, which quite honestly was never really a Republican thing, was never a conservative thing. Are they going to continue to go down that road, which with probably Vance as its flag bearer, or are they going to go back to more traditional conservative views? See, so I think as much as the Democrats have to figure out who's taking over that party in terms of, is it going to be the far left or is it going to be, the more traditional Democrats, like your typical, what I would say used to be your typical Catholic Democrat, the union person, the person who believed in unions, a union job, but they were still, religious, this and that, family oriented.
I think you're completely missing the point on this. It's not a matter of what the Republican Party wants. It's no longer a matter of what the Libertarian Party wants, nor the Democrat Party. It's a matter of how technology has changed this game. And the type of candidate it's no longer the party wagging the tail. Now it truly is the people. So the party will have to adapt as to what the people want. Social media is becoming that powerful. As I when we were off air, I was jokingly telling you how Patrick Bet David had a couple hundred thousand people watching, more than ABC News or CBS News, more than Megyn Kelly. Some of these, it's the people are gravitating to what they want. Now the downside of that is you get tribalism. So I think maybe the question more is, do we go down a tribalistic road that's a negative road, or do we figure out a way to come to our senses? But the parties are no longer dictating the type of candidates we get, even though they would want to.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit of both, right? Because populism is never a good recipe for any sort of like if you believe in society as an entity, populism has never been a moral way to guide a country, right? So that's both frightening and satisfying at the same time, because you do want people to have a say in their government and actually run their government. But at the same time,
what creates populism, John?
What?
What creates populism?
There is no such thing as creating populism.
Populism appeals to ordinary people who feel their concerns are being disregarded by the established elite.
Yeah, populism.
So the parties have created populism in the sense they've not given the people what they wanted. They've dictated the people. So somebody from the outside comes in and they're who the people go to. That's how do you think Obama took power? He wasn't popular, whether people want to admit it or not, he was a populist candidate. So my point is
well, he wasn't a pop. No, wait a second. You're confusing popular with populist.
Populism. Two are not the same. Populism. I'm giving you the definition of populism, a political approach that strives to appeal to ordinary people who feel that their concerns are disregarded by established elite groups. Right. Obama appealed to that, to the white Democrat who wanted unity, to the white moderate who wanted unity, to blacks who he told, you aren't getting your due. I'm black, I'll give you your due. See, that's what I'm saying. I look at it reality. I take the definitions. I take the classroom out of it. I go and look at the people, and I go look at the candidate. Trump did the same thing. And what did these people see in them? They saw a fighter for the rights. So if the parties don't want populism to rear its head, you know, they've got to come to the table and not shove these rich elitist candidates down our throats.
That's fine.
Of the world.
Well, that's fine, and that's why, like, you'll have the so-called protest votes and the protest parties, because they'll always exist because that has happened. But because
I just brought that up, Big John, because I get confused. I don't think that's the definition of populism, but I think you mean it in a different way that I don't understand.
No, populism means just appealing to whatever the masses want. And because you're doing that, that means you as the politician, you as the policymaker, actually has no policy, no integrity of policy, no consistency of policy. Look at Trump.
That's where we disagree. Because what's populism right now? We're tired of paying high gas prices. We're tired of paying all this money for food prices at 70% higher for eggs. Yeah. So that's not, I mean, that does align with what some politicians want to do, have a thriving economy to help the people. You're pretty cynical, and I get it. Politics, it makes
I'm not cynical in the sense that I'm like, I understand if inflation is a problem, people want that addressed. Politicians will address it. Where the populism comes in is where you do something that if you had any integrity, you know, is wrong, but it happens to appeal to the mob.
But that's like everything has the good and the bad extremes of it. You know, see, when I for example, nationalism to me is about patriotism. Every immigrant will tell you, I love nationalism. I love a strong country where we all work together to have a great economy, to bring the country together. But then somebody else will say, no, William, nationalism is this. And they'll tell you everything bad that nationalism can become. You know, so that's my point to you.
Populism, generally speaking, almost overwhelmingly is a bad thing, because it means that you never have honest politicians. You are requesting the dishonest politician. You are requesting the Donald Trump. You are requesting Kamala Harris.
He's not you may not like him, but all I know is the working man's wage was growing. The economy is growing. He removed the regulations that allowed the company. I look at each person like now Obama, I view that way. Now, Kamala.
Well, you view that way because
because of their policies and the results of their policies, the inflation, the economy, the border. You know.
Well, inflation is the result of government spending and the result of printing money. No president in history has done that more than Trump. That's what I mean. Populism just says, "Oh, you want inflation down? Let me tell you about inflation." But because nobody stands
up.
Right?
You're right.
That's the result.
I didn't like that about Trump. I'm like, dude, you're spending more money than any POTUS, but I liked other things. See, I don't look at life in black and white because life is not black and white.
Neither is fair enough. But when it comes to populism, you do understand that populism doesn't allow for that. Populism, if you're the person who's in the office.
Well, I just explained to you how some people look at populism. They're tired of all these high prices, the illegals, all that. So, and because that's because the Democrat Party right now, and you saw their with surrogates out there saying, no, Mr. Black man, no, Mr. Latino, the economy is actually improving. Whereas the person they're talking to is, but I'm not worth 20 some odd million where I don't
but
care what the price
that's not populism,
is.
I'm William. Struggling. William, that's not populism. Populism just says that whoever is the majority, whoever is the mass of people at that point that's going to win you an election, you just pander to them regardless of whatever you feel or whether something is right or wrong. For example,
and that's what I'm trying to tell you. That's one negative aspect of populism. I just gave you the definition, a political approach that strives to appeal to ordinary people who feel their concerns are disregarded by established elite groups. See, you're more into wanting to win the argument, whereas I agree with you, but you're failing to sit there and see, hey, a populist can be somebody who agrees with the ordinary guy that inflation is too high, the border's not secure. You know, I'm giving
it's
you the
not,
definition
it's not
of populism.
It's not the agreement that matters. That's not the issue of populism.
Well, so you're saying, see, you're taking populism and conforming it to your beliefs. I'm giving you the straight-up definition of the populism.
Yeah, John, but even in your definition, you're not really understanding what that definition is saying. It's not – look, any politician will run to satisfy a constituency. That in
itself
is not
populist. Are you saying Javier
Milei
is not a populist? He's a populist by definition. He's a populist.
He probably is a populist, yes.
But yet he's doing all kinds of good things because of how bad that country was going.
Yeah,
that's my point to you.
But Milei himself believes those things.
Yeah,
that's the difference.
Trump has always believed in having a strong guy from his days when he was just a real estate magnate. There's plenty of interviews with him on Stern, on Oprah, talking about the economy. He's always been down on China and how they've had a one-sided way.
But you also understand that he doesn't. When he says, "I believe in a strong economy,"
yeah.
If you think any of that has to do with the common man and their wages, that's crazy.
That's your opinion you're giving me. Your opinion says, William, I don't believe he cares about the common man, and that's fine, but that's your opinion.
His policies tell me that. His policies are facts.
What did his policies do? They created
his policies created inflation. His policies created inflation.
What was inflation when he left office? It was less than 3%.
No, it wasn't less than 3%.
Yes, it was. Now, how many jobs did he create? He didn't create any. He removed the regulatory practices that were created, because that's what we agree. Government doesn't create jobs, but he removed the mechanisms that were killing jobs. You know,
some of them he did. You're right. Some of them he did.
He also helped Latinos, blacks. Now, I didn't agree
What about his cronyisms? What about his tariffs?
That's right. You're right.
What about his debt? What about his debt?
Let me answer. I don't disagree with all his tariffs. And I do disagree with his debt. That's it. See, you look at every negative aspect of it.
No, I look at the totality.
I look at the reality of it.
I look at the totality.
No, you do not. You look at every – John, when we first met, you were trying to tell me that Trump had nothing to do with the economy prospering, that those regulations he removed had nothing to do with it. Why?
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. Listen, just to end the sort of to finish this, and it's my show, so I get to end it.
Yes,
Here's the thing. It's not that I even would argue about his policies, right? It's more just that when you have a just like Clinton, Bill Clinton was a populist, right? We always used to say this about Bill Clinton. He doesn't really have any real positions. And
right.
Someone who doesn't have any real positions cannot be trusted. Because
right.
He will sell out any constituency at any time for whatever vote he thinks he may be
right.
able to get.
Right,
right,
right, right, right.
But hold on.
When the economy ended, I mean, when he left his term, the economy was doing pretty good still.
Clinton, you mean?
Yeah. He's a Democrat, and I don't like saying that, but yeah, luckily his populism aligned by – actually, they need to come up with a term for those who just follow the polls as he did.
It's populism.
Okay.
It's populism.
It's populism aligned with what the country needed at the time.
But it was just dumb luck, right? Because, like, what happened?
Actually, it wasn't dumb luck. See, that's just it. There's a lot of things.
No, listen. It was dumb luck. What I mean by dumb luck is that the populism at the time happened to be aligned with what needed to be done to goose the economy, right? So the
populism
at the time was, oh, let's do free trade. People forget he's the one who took away tariffs. He's the one who not, like that's what's so frustrating.
He's also the one who introduced NAFTA, which is in long term has its issues that a lot of people predicted that we saw, and Trump ended up tweaking that to try to fix it. That said, let's go to the polls. I mean, not the polls.
let's do a quick one here before we. And William, I'm willing to stay here as long as you are, but. Right now, it looks like it's tightened up a little bit. 230 for Trump.
Oh, looks 205 like Virginia
for Kamala. Virginia has been called for Harris with 95%. I'm trying to see. New Mexico was given to Harris for 5.
But that was expected. There's a lot of these states that they said, oh, they're getting closer, but they're expected them.
On a personal level, I'm happy to see Colorado specifically going for Harris. Because Colorado, the LP in Colorado tried to shenanigans with RFK and then with Trump, trying to keep Chase off the ballot. And thanks to our friend Karen Ann, who was able to make sure that Chase got put on that ballot. So I'm glad to see that the Mises caucus has failed miserably in Colorado. The Republicans did not win there. Nothing against Republicans. This is more directed at the LPCO.
At the end of the day, I was looking at the numbers, and I think he had like about 350,000 at less than 0.5%. So it's not like they really had a lot of power there in that state. That state.
No, but what I'm saying is, to me personally, it's a little bit of satisfaction. As is New Hampshire going blue, because the Mises caucus that got paid off by Patrick Byrne there, the birthplace of the Mises caucus, Michael Heiss and. The white nationalists over there in New Hampshire, their state has gone blue. So
don't they split the electoral votes there?
I think that might be Vermont, but I could be wrong.
I think it's New Hampshire. There's like 3 or 4 electoral votes in the end.
Yeah, New Hampshire. Where are we? New Hampshire. Where are you? New Hampshire. I'm sorry. New Hampshire has not officially been called, but Harris is leading with 73%. I missaw the blue there. My bad eyesight.
I think that that state isn't a winner take all with the electoral ballot.
It may not be. I'm not. I'd have to check on that. But still tight. 230, 205. We'll see how the rest of it turns out as the night goes on. William, what do you think as a Republican? How do you feel this is going for Trump?
As somebody who comes from a third world, along with literally 99.9% of immigrants, we're waiting for that water pipe to burst somewhere. We saw it in 2020. That's our concern. You know, this is how it was turning out the first night. I think it all boils down to some of these swing states, Pennsylvania and Nevada and a couple of others. And Pennsylvania is one of the ones that I already showed the corruption with the 2,500 ballots, the Supreme Court having the rule to say, no, you can't count these ballots that aren't turned in properly. So, I mean, the corruption in that state is really scary. And in defense of Democrats, I think if the position were reversed in this day and age, Republicans would, I mean, they tried it in North Carolina with the ballot harvesting, which is technically illegal in that state, despite the fact it's legal literally in every other state. So, but that's what scares me. Pennsylvania scares the hell out of me in terms of its proven corruption already just through the last couple of weeks. As we talked about and fired up in Michigan, has Michigan been called yet?
No, Michigan is still in the early stages. It's only got 29% reporting.
God, I feel terrible. I'm like using my scroller here. There it is. Yeah, you're right. It's like in Michigan, you know, the ballot, once it got into the system, they said, yeah, we acknowledge this guy should not have been voted. We're going to charge him with 2 charges, but his ballot's still going to count because it's in the system. And we don't know. There's no mechanism to pull it out. So that's my concern with Pennsylvania is all these mail-in ballots. Because if not for the Supreme Court, the mail-in ballots would have been illegally counted without the dates, as by law has to be done. And the Supreme Court came and ruled and said, nope, you got to toss those out. So I just want a fair election. I don't care who wins if they win fairly. So that's my concern with Pennsylvania. So until Trump actually snags.
I was going to say, stop trying to fool us. You care who wins.
No, I do. No. I do care who wins, but okay. I can live with an election that's free and fair. That's my whole issue. So when I look at 2020 and I look at Pennsylvania, I'm like, that was not a free and fair
election. So without me joking, is a Trump loss by definition an unfair election?
Well, it depends on what the reports come out afterwards. You know, now they have posters watching. They have the lot. Like, for example, when the morning started, there were already 200 cases already filed. Why? Because the Republicans learned you got to file these before the votes are counted. And hopefully you get a judge. And it happened already a couple of times. Poll workers were allowed back in. And the DOJ is sticking their nose where it doesn't belong. And they're contradicting themselves. And again, even the Republicans, they're like saying, we don't want the DOJ. DOJ has always had poll workers. But when you put your thumb to tip the hand of any election, that destroys a country long term. Because we've done so much to have taken our elections and made them as clean as possible. Only to have technology help destroy that. I mean, I don't know if you saw, we're going to be talking about it on Fired Up tomorrow night. It's there was a guy, literally, he's pressing Trump, boom, 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 then boom, it switches. And that's happened before, you know. And I'm like, see, so my take is pencil and paper. There's enough third world and first world countries that show you can do a whole election, be done in a day, have it completely transparent, showing the votes. And again, I come from Panama. A country where I saw two dictators dictate. They were like Maduro, you know, where she won by 60 some odd percent, his opponent. And then he comes out and says, no, I won 51-49%. Whoa. Yeah. So that's my fear, John, is it's not even for us. You know, we're in our mid 50s, closer to 60. You know, our time is coming gone. What's going to happen 20, 30 years down the road if the elites take over? That's my take, I guess, with this whole election thing and with the populism. It's like, I think it's the elites dictating and shoving. We're in a class war. They want us fighting one another while they continue to enrich themselves. I mean, look at Nancy Pelosi, look at Kamala, look at all these people on the Republican side, you know, the same thing. These guys go in middle-class people, they come out rich multi-zillionaires, you know. In fact, I heard somebody say Nancy Pelosi should have gotten into the stockbroker business because her picks have been better than Warren Buffett's has ever been. You know? It's just the corruption, I guess. That's depressing. So I think if things keep going as they're going, Trump should get a win. But if we go to bed, it's all bets are off. Yeah.
Well, let's put it this way. The only I mean, I'm just looking at this real quick. He needs 40. If Georgia and Pennsylvania go Harris, which right now it's, I don't know, it's
right now Pennsylvania and Harris are leaning Trump, not by much, but they are leaning Trump. Everything boils down to Philadelphia and what else has been counted. See, that's what people don't understand. You can't look at the tallies. You have to look at what has yet to be counted.
Right. And typically speaking, rural areas, which tend to be Republican, are tabulated first because there's fewer of those. Right. And
Well, right now, Trump's sitting on about a 5-point cushion in Pennsylvania. So here's where the Republicans smartened up. And they got this because people don't understand. In 2020, they boarded up some of the registrar's offices.
Actually, I'm sorry. The number I have here for Pennsylvania is Trump is sitting on a 3-point lead. Right now, 51-48.
Well, the point
48.
Is, he's got a small lead, a 5% lead.
Yeah, very small lead. In Georgia, it's 51-48. So Pennsylvania and Georgia are in the same boat. Trump is ahead slightly.
Right.
Actually, I'll bring up the map real quick. I'm sorry, while you're talking, William, we've got Michigan, Trump leading 52-47.
Holy mackerel, that's a big lead in Michigan.
But that's only 30%.
Oh, yeah, 30% reporting. See, that's my point. There should be higher percentages reporting at this point. It's like, why are they – they've got some of these – see, some of these rules are purposely made for voter fraud to happen. They hold off on counting ballots, and then they do it at midnight under the guise, you know. And that's what happened in 2020. That's what I was telling your audience. In 2020 in Philadelphia, they actually boarded up some registrar's offices and refused to let the Republican poster co-watchers in. And then when they got the police said, we can't do anything about it. They're the ones running that poll. I mean, they were Democrat. So the Republicans have smartened up this time. So we'll see what happens. But that's what I'm trying to tell people. Once they counted those ballots, once they were in the system, you can't pull them out. That's what makes it so difficult. That's why you got to look at – that's why, again, pencil and paper. We truly want fair elections. And, you know, I do wonder what Jimmy Carter voted. I'm being sarcastic if they roll that guy out.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I'll be honest with you, too. Like, this is where we disagree. I am not I don't know if conspiracy is the right word in this case, but I I, you know, when you say, well, look, you can't detect fraud once they've voted. Yes, potentially what you're saying is true, but it also is potential fertile ground for the Alex Jones of the world.
Yeah, but
you know what I mean?
The complete point about it. The point is that if we went to pencil and paper and was transparent, none of this would be an issue. Why keep on doing it? And what's that saying? About stupid. If you or you want the same results, you keep doing the same thing. You know. Yeah. So you remove those conspiracy theories, which some of these probably are, by going back to pencil and paper and counting in one day, as Taiwan has shown, as some third world countries, even Argentina is cleaning up their elections. They had much cleaner elections this past cycle than they did ever before. So, but yet not the U.S., you know, and the problem is the people. That shit don't happen in this country. Oh, you're a moron. I show through 4 or 5 podcasts how voter fraud has been in this country since its inception, you know. And then you get CNN lying. Well, it's inconsequential. How do you know CNN? No study has ever been done in the history of this country on a national basis in terms of to determine how much voter fraud. It's one of those studies nobody's ever going to do because who wants to expose your country that's supposed to be a beacon of light to the rest of the world? Our shit sucks.
It was also inconsequential based on whatever evidence was brought forward. That's what allows you to say it's inconsequential.
Well, and again, you go to your conspiracy theories. Me, they're lying because they can get away with the lie because no study has been done. Let's get a study doing, but nobody wants to do the study. The government's not going to foot that bill.
Well,
the
it goes on.
Companies don't have the money.
It goes on both sides, right?
Like, that's my whole point. Go put a pencil and paper where you can count them. Have poll watchers.
I was going to tell you. It's funny because when I voted for Chase and Mike today, it took me like half an hour with nobody in the polling place because I went at a dead time. I went at like 10:30 in the morning.
I used to be against the national holiday, but I'm like, maybe they should because social media has completely changed it. Politics has become like a secondary Hollywood, you know, meaning with the players. And
now it's ratings. Now it's ratings, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's ratings. So
John, it's one of the few times cable news gets ratings.
Now, let me tell you this. What I was going to say, when you said, oh, you know, they're doing this for voter fraud when they don't count them till midnight and stuff. See, if you had told me they're holding on to those ballots because they want their state to be in the news as the one that decides the election, I'm more likely to buy into that than they did it for fraud.
Why? It's only a handful of people who care about the ratings, and they're at the networks. You know, the people working in
the registered
office care about the candidates, not about the ratings. Or waiting.
Listen, why is Iowa always the first with their primaries?
That's because the party selected it that way.
No, it's because they want to be they've always positioned themselves to be, because several states said we want to go before them.
Right, but the parties control that. So the parties went along with it for whatever reason. Not this cycle. The Democrats didn't go with it first.
No, because a lot of the party said we should get into media centers first, right? So a lot of them are like, they'd rather, because Iowa's in the middle of nowhere. I think originally Iowa was picked, if I remember correctly, simply because they thought that represented the average heartland, right? So they said, okay, this is the average Joe working, you know, with a plow or in the farm or whatever, right? He's not a New Yorker. He's not a Los Angelino. He's not a Texan, you know. Just everyday Joe American, but
in a way it's true. It's just it's mostly white Joe American. But then what are you going to do? Go to LA or New York, one of those places first? You know, I mean, but John, here's what the public doesn't realize: there have been more states over the last 3 or 4 cycles that have changed their primary dates because some of them are like, by the time it gets to us, we've already decided the candidate, so they've moved them up.
Yes.
So that happens every cycle. It's just everybody looks at Iowa because it's the first. But I'm like, they've been moving around for a long ass time.
Part of that is prior to, like, say, the last 5 or 6 presidential election cycles, believe it or not, the media sort of had a gentleman's agreement. We will not report on these until every state poll has closed. Right?
They made that law now. That's the law now. You can't report it, I mean, per state. Because of Florida with the Kerry and Bush, they reported Florida. People forget Florida is in 2 time zones.
Yeah. You know? One's Eastern and the other one's central. Right.
I remember that. I was driving home when they were talking about it. They're like, people are leaving because they're saying Florida's already decided. Yeah. and I'm like, holy mackerel. And see, and the media was reporting that. And even when they were told they stopped reporting that, they kept reporting that. See, that's what I'm saying, human nature. You know, you're right. In a fair world, hey, guys, boss, our newsroom is going to report it. But then a combination of they were just corrupt. Now, with this time, it wasn't as bad. Only 85% was pro Kamala and 78% was anti-Trump. But at the end of the day, it's also, as you said, the ratings. They're like, well, screw that. If ABC is going to report it, then we have to report it. You know, we got right. We can't sit there and be left in the dark.
Right.
So it's a combination. So again, I go to human nature.
And of course, there's money in the network that makes the correct call first, right? That's the other thing.
That used to be the case, John, before the internet. But I think it's kind of like insider reporting. At KFFL, when I owned that, we were always breaking news, but we would always credit the reporter. And a lot of reporters went to us to break the news because we just posted up there with their link to their site. And it wasn't like always major news. And if it was major news, we'd break it at the same time as a major player. But then once Twitter, once other social media platforms got around, that kind of the insider breaking the story is something you rarely hear. It's more egos now with the individuals who right. book it first, Waj or Sharm, you know, stuff, or Schefter, that. But as far in general, once it's broken by one, 30 seconds later, it's broken to another. So I think that's kind of ending, you know. And plus, you got the dearth of the death of cable. Look at Patrick Brett David, a couple hundred thousand beating at least half of the mainstream
right,
media.
Right. And just a quick update. It looks like Kamala picked up 4 electoral votes. It's now Trump at 230. No, Hawaii.
Oh yeah, Hawaii was.
Looks like Hawaii has been called for Kamala. So it's 230 to 209. Just a quick update there.
Yeah. And that's why they go these battleground states, because they can tell which states are going to lean, whatever. It's like a friend of mine who lives in Hawaii, who's a conservative. He goes, man, I'm retired. He goes, I got a second job. But, man, he goes, these assholes who keep voting leftists, and they wonder why they can't buy a pineapple. That's what he said. I'm like, whoa. And he's Hawaiian. He goes, I can say that. I'm Hawaiian, bro. He's Puerto Rican Hawaiian.
Well, actually, what I was going to tell you before is when I went to vote today, as I noted earlier when we had Mike Termata on, you can't vote Libertarian. You have to write in Libertarian candidates in New York. So I went to write it in, and the machine would not accept my vote. The handwritten ballot. Yeah. Same thing happened when I voted for Larry Sharp the last time out. So I literally had to stand there, and the woman's like, well, I don't know what to do. And I was like, call your supervisor, get him or her over here. This is, you know, this vote is getting counted. And I stood there for half an hour. And like I said, I was the only one in the joint at that point, you know?
Wow.
And, so they came over and they said, okay, you know, you have to write it, make sure it's all in the box and this and that. It was. And then I stood there until the machine actually accepted the ballot. Right.
So I mean, that's what you got to do. But see, that's
of course. See, that's my story.
And that's what you should do, though. What irks me is when people leave and then they raise a fuss. I couldn't vote. Well, you should have stayed in line if it's that important. You know, it's where we become lazy. We're a lazy ass society. In many ways, in that sense, where we want to cater to the individual more so than doing what's practical. You know, that's why I'm looking at, well, maybe we do need to make it a national holiday. You know, just go out and vote. The lines are open from this time frame to this time frame. You're off. Don't give me the shit there. You didn't have time to vote. And that does away with that. I mean, we have a freaking holiday now for every Tom, Dick, and Harry. You know, and we're going to have eventually in the next 10 years, there's going to be some kind of transgender holiday. You know, transgender day. Yeah, woo! I want off. I'm transgender for the day. I'm being sarcastic, obviously. You know, I lost the page, but I was looking at the numbers for the other candidates, and I didn't think the Libertarian Party would hit 1%. You thought right now, I think last time I looked nationally, they were at 0.4%. I was surprised that Jill Stein was doing so well, to be quite honest.
Well, Jill Stein, the last I checked, and I'll check again right now, the last I checked, she was running neck and neck with the Libertarian Party. She was running neck and neck with
Well, that's my point. She has staying power. I'm like, at what point does she eventually go away? Because at the end of the day, she's still, you know, getting that 0.5% every cycle. Yeah.
Oh, the funny thing is, if Trump ends up losing maybe in some of these states,
yeah.
The irony is that Robert Kennedy has gathered about 500,000 votes in the country.
And that's what I mean by these Secretary of State. Some of them they couldn't because of time, but some of them they did it just to spite, you know. And I'm like, see, that, you know, see, the term election interference is thrown around, and I look at it: is this a move made to interfere in the election? That's how I look at each. And I'm like, that's election interference. You know, it's like the Secretary of State of Michigan with 14,000 votes. You know, they had all this proof. Oh, no, there's nothing. It's clean election. Oh, but I'll give it to the FBI and Christopher Wray. That was 3-4 years ago. They still haven't come out with any analysis on that. You know, so it's again, fair election. You know, remove him off the ballot if you can. He says he withdrew. He did that. If you can't, I get that, too. You know, it's a case-by-case basis, you know. Same thing with like, libertarians. It's like, if they qualify, get them on the ballot. But what happens? These guys play tricks.
Yeah, you know? And it looks like Jill Stein, Robert Kennedy.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, Jill Stein, Robert Kennedy, and Chase Oliver all look to be tracking at about 0.4% of the popular vote.
Yeah, they actually have the one I was – here it is. They actually had the votes listed. Harris, where's it at?
Yeah, I have it here in front of me. Yeah, so it's
It has Kennedy with about 492,000 votes, Chase Oliver with about 460, and Kennedy and Stein are the ones who are actually neck and neck, with Chase trailing by about 30,000. Then there's Claudia de la Cruz, Cornel West. Neither do I, but she's beating Cornel West, who got some pub out there, you know.
And it's like, it's like I said, it's a shame. Like, to Mike's point,
God, John, Vermin Supreme has 910 votes nationwide.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. He declared himself president. Like he was, he did a ripoff of the old Trump thing in 2020 when he started declaring, when he started claiming states early in the night before they flipped for him. Flipped against him. So he just said, I declare all these states to be mine. I declare I'm the winner in 50 states and whatever. He's still doing his performance shtick. But yeah, so right now, 230 to 209, like we said, the majority of the swing states are still in play. And I guess technically this election is not decided yet.
So you know, you're right. They said it was going to be close.
Well, I thought it would be close, but I know there were a lot of both Republicans and Democrats who thought this would be a runaway election for their candidate.
I thought Trump would had a chance to lock it up tonight, but Virginia, the only way I thought he could do that was if Virginia went his way. Yeah, and that's not looking. Minnesota's finally flipping blue. It was red there for a while, but they probably got the Twin Cities in.
Yeah,
it's so ironic, you know, they get burned to the ground and they still vote Democrat. Yeah, Illinois was always a given. So some of the blue states is they just have a higher populist count, so they gain more electoral votes. You know,
Arizona's actually they're 50% reporting, and it's basically dead even between Trump and Arizona. Yeah. That one's. Like Arizona's where like it may come to fisticuffs in the streets.
Well, the problem is they're curing the votes. They cure the votes by just calling the House. Hey, did you vote? You know, it's like they're calling the House because the signatures don't match up. Those people whose ballots are having an issue need to go down to the office, but they're not doing that to my knowledge. I'm like, you can call the House. Oh yeah, I voted. He may have voted, but they may have a couple ballots there for him. They don't know. You know, so it's like, so even the process of trying to clean it up still has a long way to go. So Arizona, to me, is even worse than Pennsylvania in many ways. But that's not unheard of with a border state.
Harris just moved. She's like crawling. It went from 230. She went from 209 to 210. I'm wondering what's the one electoral college vote she just picked up.
I don't know.
Not Massachusetts.
She got Hawaii and Virginia. Maybe you miscounted.
No, it was 209. It just updated to 210.
Maybe it was a mistake on their part.
I'm trying to see.
New Hampshire.
New Hampshire's four
votes. Yeah, four electors at stake. It's split. 34.7 expected to vote. Electors, one Harris. She picked up one of the.
Okay. So now it's 230 to 210. Okay.
Yeah.
So even if Harris stays where this is, out of 538. That means Trump would be somewhere near 328 if he were to get every other. If Trump swept, he'd be at 328. And let's see, 118 for her. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's also some close Senate races. So whoever wins controlling the Senate is important. Cruz easily took Texas after everybody kept saying that was going to be close.
Well, the Senate,
McCormick is winning in the right.
It looks like the Senate is Republican. It's going to stay Republican.
Yeah, but it's really Republican by one vote. And with the rhinos there, that's why they have issues at times. I think Ohio is a race to watch in the Senate race. Have they
Ohio yet? Ohio's been called for Moreno, the Republican.
Really? See, so that's an upset there. And West Virginia, I think, was a Manchin. If I'm correct, West Virginia went Republican, correct, too. So even then, yeah. Even if Kamala gets elected, she's going to have a deadlock, which is good. That's what you want in government, a grind, you know?
Oh, but, yeah. If the government does nothing, I'd be thrilled.
Exactly. And I'm in the same boat. The problem is Congress doesn't want to do their jobs, so they're okay with the president. See, this is what's messed up about our country. We've given the courts way too much power, and the president and the courts have way too much power. Why? Because Congress is so corrupt that they care more about getting reelected and not having to vote on tough issues that could create chaos for them back home.
And it looks like the Republicans are in the lead for the House as well. So we'll see what happens.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they've already won the Senate. The House, they're winning 178 to 139 right now. I'm not quite sure which ones are in play because they don't list them by state. You have to go down, look at all the names. But they're at.
Has Montana been called, John?
For president?
No, for Senate.
Oh, for Senate. Hold on.
Oh no, it hasn't been called. Oh my goodness, so. It's only 15% of the votes when counted. He's got a big lead.
Yeah, where's Montana?
Tester has always held off. Has always held off the Democrats. It's like each cycle, it's gotten closer. It seems like, but it looks like this cycle it may finally. The presidencies are one thing, but these Senate and congressional, they tend to go when the constituents mad, regardless of how the presidency goes the last few cycles.
Pennsylvania Senate race is very close.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's McCormick there. I expect Bob Casey to win that one, but we'll see how that one goes. It's 84% of the vote. See, here's the problem. Even when they get 100% of the vote, Pennsylvania already said we're not going to be done counting. You know, and see, that's where your conspiracy theories come in, really. Every other – Florida, why can't you – Florida was – they were done, within hours. It's like – so you have to question, why is it taking you so long? And it's because the way they purposely set up the receiving and the counting of the ballots. Again, we allow too much politics to get in the way of, say, simple, basic, transparent math. Only a Democrat will tell you 4 + 4 = 9.
Only a Democrat?
4 + 4 = Honestly, you've never heard of the Republicans in our lifetime. They've been accused of this, been accused of that. The only thing you'll hear is, Putin got Trump elected. That's pretty much it. It's Putin. Putin got Trump elected in 2016. See that's what. And then they challenged the vote. Nobody reported that. And but they made a big old thing about it with Trump in 2020. The hypocrisy. So the Democrat Party in my eyes has always been the party started by Andrew Jackson. A racist, the KKK, they were against, they voted against women, the right to vote. They voted against the civil rights. Everything they've done, yet they're the ones who are seen as the saviors of every person of color. When in reality, if you look at the record, you're like, actually, that's not how it's been. But that's marketing 101. The Democrats are phenomenal marketers. I mean, look at Adam Schiff. Not that I'm a Steve Garvey fan, but the guy's corrupt. Guys, as corrupt as he is, I guess Swalwell maybe is even worse. But then I look at Swalwell as you're just a dumb, ignorant fool, who was thinking with his little wee wee with Fan Fan, or whatever the Chinese spy. Anyway, Big John,
I have no idea what you just said, to be honest with you.
Swalwell was a congressman who slept with a Chinese spy, and the media kind of failed to cover it. Her name was Fan Fan. Feinstein. Her chauffeur was a Chinese spy for 20 years. You know, it's like every Chinese spy that's come out over the last decade has been associated with Democrats, you know, but it never gets covered. And that's my whole issue, is what the public perceives versus what the data actually shows are two different things. Yeah. I mean, you saw the campaign. What was Kamala saying? They all went back to the tropes that created two assassination attempts, the Trump. You know, they pulled out every, you know, the big conspiracy theory that our site's throwing now is the celebrities are endorsing Kamala because they need her in power so they don't get prosecuted because of all the tapes P. Diddy has.
it's like I said, if you're on Twitter the last week especially, it's just like you get it from all sides, like Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, Greens, they, like all the nonsense comes out at once, you know, and like, it's just so funny to me, you know, and look, I'm critical of my own tribe, so to speak, right? I don't particularly, like, I literally saw Dave Smith say he was shitting on Reason Magazine for publishing that article about why no libertarian should support Trump. And he literally said, here's the article. They did not once address the issues that would make libertarians vote for Trump. And I went and read the article, and I literally cut out like the three paragraphs where they said, here's why no libertarians should vote for Trump, and here's the issues where these right-leaning libertarians – and they just listed them out. So I just copied it, replied to Dave Smith, and said, literally addressed all your questions in that article. You know, and it's not like Dave Smith's an idiot. Do you know what I mean? I don't think he's an idiot.
You're right.
Feigning that purposeful ignorance, right? And if you and I just disagree on something, we disagree on something. But look, I'll defend you Republicans. When they were trying to make out that Trump said that Liz Cheney needs to be put in front of a...
That's
what I meant. I was like, that's nuts. He said nothing of the sort. Zero.
Not even close.
And I think my tweet was, there's enough reasons to hate Trump without you guys making stuff up, right? And that was a case that drives people into Trump's arms. Like, that type of coverage drives people into Trump's arms.
Well, now it is because of technology. People are starting to see. But before technology, our sources of information were the papers who have been doing this for decades. I mean, you're the one who first told me you bought Cronkite. Yeah.
Even as a kid, I thought I knew Cronkite was a communist, basically. Even as a kid, you could see that. And
how long has he been dead now?
It's been a while. I don't know. But there's a whole generation of people who might be watching this, William, who have no idea who Walter Cronkite was.
I say that in my Red, White, and Rude podcast all the time. I just talked about Mike Noumie, the guy from Baywatch, Terry Garr, who was a massive actress in the 70s, early 80s. There was somebody else who died. And I was like, how most kids today, huh? Who are they? You know, Cary Grant, they wouldn't know. I'm like, Cary Grant was bigger than Tom Cruise was in his day. You know, it's fame is fleeting. And as I get older, I look at people who want to leave their legacy. I'm like, who cares? You're dead. You know, who really cares? You're dead. And your legacy is only as good as whoever's in power and decides what was wrong and right. You know, I mean, look at Columbus, you know, went from the discoverer of America to a villain.
Yeah, a villain.
And he was neither. What I mean by neither is he was a human being. I mean, in Panama, people don't realize, but Columbus and his brother, that was their last stand, in essence, before Queen Isabella called them back and said, no mas. You know, they were torturing people. They actually wiped out a few tribes there and genocided them, you know. So I hold that against Columbus? No, because I look at what he did. He was an explorer. You know, we all have our bad, you know. I mean, it's like
Or you could do both. You could admit that he genocided some people and he was an explorer. You could do both.
But I look at what he did and that rose above humanity to do what others didn't do. Whereas Mr. Tom, Dick, and Harry there, scratching their ass, who's done nothing, becomes more holier than Jesus ever it could be, you know, behind their computer. You know, I always picture these guys wiping their ass, shit stained all over their hand, hitting send on their phone where on how pure they are. Yeah,
all right. Well, on that cheerful imagery, let's see if we can wrap it up for the night. You've been watching Free for All, our special election night coverage. Thanks again to Mike Termott, our guest earlier in the show, for coming on. He initially was slated for about 15 minutes, William. He stayed on for about an hour. So we want to thank Mike for coming on and sharing his insights with us, both on the election, his journey during this election with Chase Oliver, and then again also for his thoughts on the future of the Libertarian Party. William, my friend, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to help me co-host tonight and help us get the Trumpian perspective on the votes. And before we go, one last update. Donald Trump, the totals haven't changed. Donald Trump, 230. Kamala Harris, 210. Swing states still in play. So,
Big John,
yes, sir.
I hope you don't mind. Let me show my screen because it shows which states are leading, though, too. And this doesn't mean anything because it could always change. But you see who's leading red and who's leading blue. Yeah. Nevada is a critical state in all this, and they are still showing as no lean anywhere. Georgia, right. Pennsylvania, it's Michigan and Wisconsin. You know, it's after it's said and done, if Trump takes those, damn, Trump won by, but yet it's extremely close counting in those states. And again, these election laws is when I get my worry up. Again, pencil and paper, we will be seeing this. So I guess Taiwan, I studied a little bit about Taiwan's elections, John. And what they do is when the ballots come in, it's kind of like this massive bulletin board, each precinct, and they're counting them and they're putting up all the numbers. And there's people in the public just there watching it. You know, that's as transparent as you can get, And I'm like, why do we make these hard? Because of human nature and power and corruption.
Well, also that we have 330 million people in this country as opposed to
Taiwan. It's done by district. They're done each year. That's the other thing is registrars. And see, you're looking at it from a national perspective. When you do it by registrar's office, you break it down that way. Maybe you add some registrar's office instead of putting money into nonsensical stuff. You know, how fast can a crayfish run on a fucking freaking treadmill? You know, if you put the money into more registrar's office, you could have free and fair elections. Like our tax dollars, we both agree, hey, we're taxed way too much. But at least put it where it's actually going to help the country, you know? And so yeah, and there's, like I said, Javier Milei's improved their election process down there. And the fact that he got elected in a corrupt system speaks volumes of how angry the people were there. People don't realize how before we were born, Argentina was one of the richest and wealthiest countries in this hemisphere, if not the world. Then look at Brazil. So it's kind of like the top 10. It's which dictator is the flavor of the decade there that brings the country up or down, We'll see. But anyway, Big John, it was great to be on there. Real quick, though, you think that the Libertarians can hit 1%?
No. I thought so before the election, but the way things are now with Kennedy is a spoiler for a lot of people. He's a spoiler for Trump in those states where he couldn't get off the ballot, but he's also a spoiler for Oliver, because I have a feeling if you were willing to vote for Kennedy, odds are you would have voted for someone like Oliver or Stein. And I would think that most of those Kennedy votes, considering he tried in some way to get the Libertarian nomination and that the Libertarian Party has entered into a co-fundraising agreement since they're all MAGA plants.
Yeah, but I think that changed after he went for Trump. I think that kind of dropped.
No, No, that's still in place, and all that money is going to Trump now. So it's going to Trump through
RFK. How much
RFK.
Money was that, really, Big John?
I don't know, but whatever it was money that shouldn't – the Libertarian Party shouldn't have been raising for another candidate.
I agree.
Regardless of that, that's okay for now. Let's end the show, William, by again saying thank you. You're watching us on Grumblings Media. Check us out, grumblingsmedia.com. Past episodes of Free For All, you could go check all our great episodes, freeforallshow.com. Also, follow us on social media. Any social media platform, just look for @grumblingsmedia, all one word. William, give a plug for your show. When's the next episode of Fired Up?
Yes, we're going to be analyzing the election tomorrow. If Michigan and Wisconsin go Trump's way, it's as close to a done deal as possible. We're going to be breaking it down in terms of how the states went. And to be quite honest, Big John, it's gone as most as it went last cycle. You know, again, it's going to be what happens when we go to sleep and we wake up in the morning to see the real results. But we're going to be broadcasting tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern time. We're going to be live streaming 6 p.m. Western time. You can find that at Grumbling or West Coast time. You can find that at grumblingsmedia.com. And we're going to have another points on the board this week, as well as a red, white, and rude. And we're going to be having a conservative woman, a beautiful young girl. She's going to talk about conservative women and dating for you youngsters out there. Yeah. So how's that going? 40% in my research, Big John, 40% more women are liberal today than they were just even from 10 years ago.
That's good. I like loose women. All right. William, thanks for that. And to everyone out there, thanks again for watching Free For All. This is Big John, and we'll catch you next time. Peace, everyone.